I like this letter because this letter describes something which is important for us, which is how we can integrate what we learn from the Shastra, from Srila Prabhupada, from our gurus, from the senior devotees. We can integrate that. So what we learn becomes part of our lifestyle. You understand this word, lifestyle? You can have a devotional lifestyle, a material lifestyle, an athletic lifestyle, a Bollywood lifestyle. So what happens for a lot of devotees, we have the devotional lifestyle at the temple or at home, but in the world, the lifestyle changes and our consciousness changes. So we may not be living the way scripture teaches. We would do that at home. It's kind of like in the Catholic Church. The mafia, they're all Catholics. So they come to the church and they bow down and then they go out and do their mafia work. So it's not aligned. There are two lives which are very different. And so the challenge for us as devotees is to have the same life. What we learn, what we teach, and what we live. And often they're different. Sometimes we're very humble at the temple, but we go into the world and we're very intolerant or proud. So we have two different things going on. And sometimes we think it's okay because I'm not at the temple. So the instructions are only when you're at the temple, or only when you're with devotees. And then you forget the instruction when you're in the world. So it's a problem for everybody. This morning we were reading about a community of people called the Amish people, and they live on farms in America. And they have their own communities and their own schools. And some crazy man came to their school and killed some of their children. And then he killed himself. Killed the children, killed himself. And then they forgave the man. And they told the wife, you can live in our community and we'll take care of you. And so one pastor, one priest, he said that these people, they live their philosophy. They are their philosophy. They are their teachings. There's no difference. That's how they were able to forgive. They didn't have to think about it. Because forgiveness is a Christian practice. It's a practice in Christian consciousness. So because it's part of their teaching, they had become their teaching. I'll read what exactly he said. He said, they had been preparing for that act of forgiveness for a lifetime. It was built into their practice as people who forgive. It wasn't a decision, it was who they had become. They didn't have to decide, should I do it or not? They are living what they're believing. So often, we don't live what we believe. Sometimes we think we do, but we don't realize that we don't always. So how would you know if you're living what you believe? Well, here's a thought, one way you could think of it. Let's say I didn't know you, and I was hired by a company to find out what you believe. But I couldn't ask you. The only way I could find out is by observing you, how you live your life. So that was my job. I'm going to find out what you believe, and I'm going to report to my company, but you can't tell me. And I'm going to follow you with a camera from a distance so you don't know I'm following you. And I'm going to look at your life, and I'm going to see what you believe. You're a devotee, but I don't know what a devotee means. I don't know. So I observe your life and I see what you do. And I see how you deal with people I see what you do when nobody's looking, when you're all alone and nobody knows. I see what you do, and then I report. So now if somebody did that to you, do you think they would report exactly what you think you believe, or they would come up with a different report? Think about it. What would they report? So they see you at work and they see you yelling at somebody. So they report that. What does he believe? He believes in yelling. They see you angry. She believes in being angry. Or they see when you're all alone, you're spending hours looking at these magazines. Oh, he believes looking at reading. You know, what do you believe? But in your heart, you think, no, I don't believe in those things. But the other person says, you must believe in them because that's what you're doing. So sometimes the problem is when we say, I believe something, we're saying, this is what Krishna consciousness teaches. We're saying, this is what I should believe. But it doesn't mean we believe it, because our actions may be different. Does that make sense? I think I believe it, but I don't realize I don't. So you can think, what would that person say about what you believe? Would it be humble, forgiving, tolerant, patient, kind, compassionate, loving? Or would they say you believe other things? You think like that. Okay? So I want to, that's the introduction. Don't just think you believe it because you believe it. But you believe it when you act it. Right? So, it was who they had become. Who have we become? That's what we believe. Right? So now I'm going to read a letter. It's an interesting letter. It discusses this point and other points, and we'll talk about everything. But the letter is so important, even though it doesn't focus just on this one point alone, I wanted to read it. And I have to give you an introduction to the context of the letter, who wrote the letter and why he wrote it. So the person who wrote it, I know him personally, and I was living in the temple with him when he wrote the letter to Prabhupada. And he, his wife was living in an apartment, but he was living in the temple. He was kind of practicing renunciation. So he wanted to live in the temple. And he had a small son, maybe 7 months old. And he was so absorbed in Krishna consciousness that he wrote to Prabhupada and said, I want to leave my wife and take sannyas. And he, he was 22 years old. And he wrote to Prabhupada to take sannyas. And he had a 7-month-old child. And how old was his wife? 20? 19? Sounds crazy, doesn't it? To you? Doesn't that sound? Well, I guess in history in India, sometimes you have the, like Mirabai or others, they don't want to marry, or they get married, but they have no interest. So maybe you can relate a little bit. But he wasn't Mirabai. This was different. This was madness. Not spiritual advancement. So Prabhupada says, now you are married. There is some obligation according to our Vedic system. These things cannot be taken so lightly, otherwise the whole thing will become a farce. Get married without considering what is the serious nature of married life, then if there is a disturbance, I do not like my wife or husband, let me go away. Everyone else is doing that. So this may not relate so much to Indian culture, but the interesting thing that it relates to is that he is a devotee, he's married, he should be responsible, he should take care of his wife. That's the teaching. We should be compassionate, but he's not. He's not doing that. And he doesn't realize he's not doing it. So a lot of times we'll do something which is not aligned with what Krishna consciousness teaches, and we won't even realize we're We're not doing it, right? We had a class this morning about resentment and forgiveness. And a lot of times we hold resentment and we don't even realize it's wrong. It's not what devotees do. It's not how devotees think. Sometimes we're envious of somebody, or we're jealous, or we're critical. And Prabhupada said, devotees do not find fault. That's the definition, one definition. Devotees do not find fault. So how many times do we find fault? Maybe every day. So we don't realize, I'm not supposed to do that if I'm a devotee. That's not what we teach. So we have, you know, okay, on one hand we're doing bhakti, but on the other hand we're doing things which are against bhakti. That's the problem. And the bigger problem is when we don't realize it. At least if you're doing it and you realize it, you can do something. You can improve yourself if you don't even realize it. It's very subtle. Sometimes we don't know. We don't even see it. Now, Prabhupada, quotes him. He wrote, you say, and this is what he wrote to Prabhupada, you say that your association together was hindering your advancement. Krishna conscious marriage should not be taken that way. If there is any botheration, that means something is hindering my progress. So you can adapt this to anything. Like, you might say, well, it's hard to be Krishna conscious at work, or hard to be Krishna conscious at school, or I have so many responsibilities at home, it's hard to be Krishna conscious. Anyone of you ever said that before? Thought like that? It's hard to be Krishna conscious at work. Some situations make it difficult. So that's what he's saying. And Prabhupada's saying, don't think like that. So, I would like you to relate here where Prabhupada says grihastha life. You can relate it to anything in your life. Prabhupada's making a point that not only relates to grihastha life, but any situation which is difficult, or any situation you think is difficult. Once it is adopted, grihastha life, even it may be troublesome, must be fulfilled. And then the sentence before that, Prabhupada said, if something is difficult, don't think that I have to give it up. It's hindering my progress. Then he goes on to tell him that, you know, you need to take care of your wife. And if you don't take care of your wife, then obviously, he said, our whole movement will become a laughingstock, because we'll have all these divorces. So then he goes on to say, we should never think our so-called advancement as being conditioned or dependent upon some set of material circumstances, such as marriage, vanaprast, or this or that. Mature understanding of Krishna consciousness means that whatever condition of life I am in at present, that is Krishna's special mercy upon me. Therefore, let me take advantage in the best way possible to spread Krishna consciousness and conduct my spiritual master's mission. So what does Prabhupada mean? Sri Radha Govinda ki jai. Jagannath Baladev Subhadra ji ki jai. Let me read this one thing again. This is the important point. We should never think of our so-called advancement as being conditioned by or dependent upon some set of material circumstances. So how does this relate to the topic? Well, the way it relates is you may find yourself in a certain situation and you say, I can't be Krishna conscious in that situation. Have you ever found yourself in a situation? You say, this is too difficult to be Krishna conscious. And then you don't even try. Why should I try? I can't be Krishna conscious in this situation. Is that true? That you can't be Krishna conscious in that situation? Is that true? It's not true. But it's only true if you think it's true. Because when you think it's true, what do? You don't try to be Krishna conscious in that situation. And why don't you try? Because you believe it's not possible. Does that make sense? Why would you try to do something if you don't think it's possible? You don't. You only try to do things which you think are possible, at least remotely possible. At least there's a chance I can do it. But if you think there's no chance, you don't do it. So if you find some situation in your life and you think, I can't be Krishna conscious in this situation, then you're right, you can't, because that's how you think. But if you think, I can be, then Krishna will inspire you with the intelligence to understand how to do it. Because now you're open to what Prabhupada's saying. I want to read it again. We should never think our so-called advancement as being conditioned by or dependent upon some set of material circumstances. So it goes back to the idea, oh Prabhu, when I'm at the temple, I'm very Krishna conscious. But when I go out in the world, I forget everything. And then I get angry. I get angry at my children. I don't treat my wife nice. I don't treat my husband nice. Devotees tell me these things. Everywhere I go, I hear this. So then my question is, why isn't Krishna consciousness working? Does it not work? Does it only work in the temple? Does it only work when you're surrounded by devotees? You wouldn't yell at your wife in front of the devotees, because they would think you're not a very good devotee if you do that. So when I'm in front of the devotees, I'm very careful. I have to look like a good devotee, because I want people to think I'm a good devotee. But I'm out in the world, and I'm not dressed like a devotee, nobody knows. So then, what do? How do we deal with this? We ask ourselves, in every situation we're in, we ask ourselves the question, how is a devotee supposed to act in this situation? What does a devotee do in this situation? Hare Krishna. It's an important question. Or you could ask, you could think of some devotee that you respect and think, how would this devotee react in this situation? What would he do? This morning, in talking about forgiveness, we made an important point that the reason we often can't forgive is because we can't find any reason to forgive. Somebody does something, hurts you, and you think, well, there's no reason to forgive him. I can't find a reason. But we said a devotee does not have to find a material reason to forgive, because a devotee is forgiving. A materialistic person might need a reason. Well, why should I forgive you? But a devotee, he forgives because he's a devotee. He doesn't want to see another person suffer. That's a devotee. That's why a devotee forgives. Even if the person doesn't deserve it. Why should I forgive you? You don't deserve it. But a devotee thinks, no, if I was in his situation, right, I'd want to be forgiven, correct? So I should forgive him. But sometimes we get it backwards and we think, I want mercy, but for him, he must be punished. Mercy for me, justice for everyone else. Ever think like that? That's the wrong way to think. That's how materialistic people think. Krishna, please give me mercy, but punish this devotee. And we think that way, and we don't even realize it's the wrong way to think. Isn't that amazing? We could be thinking in a way which is not Krishna conscious at all, and we don't realize it. So that's the problem. So, here Prabhupada's saying, okay, your advancement is not depending on anything material. In other words, he's saying, you can be Krishna conscious in any situation, but you have to know what is the proper way to act. So sometimes we have to think, how would An advanced devotee act in this situation. This person hurt me. I feel upset. How would an advanced devotee act in that situation? Would an advanced devotee go around telling everyone in the temple, this person hurt me? No. They wouldn't do that. They would say, it's okay. They would forgive. That's how a devotee is, right? So we have to think. In every situation, what is the Krishna conscious response? What is the Krishna conscious way of seeing things? You see, part of the problem is, if you don't see in a Krishna conscious way, how can you act in a Krishna conscious way? So if you see materially, you respond materially. Would you like to hear a story? It's an interesting story. And this story is about, it shows you that you respond according to how you see something, or even how you see yourself. So there was once a lion cub who was abandoned by his family, so he was alone. And he was adopted by some sheep. Because he was so young, the sheep were young, they didn't really notice the difference so much. So he became the brother of the sheep, and he was raised by the family. But one day, when they were older, they noticed that he was different, and they kicked him out of the family. So he was very unhappy, and he went away on his own, alone, unhappy. And he was depressed and lamenting. And the devotee saw him. His name was Kashi, the lion. The devotee said, Kashi, what's wrong? He said, I've been rejected by the sheep. I'm an ugly sheep. The devotee said, Kashi, you're not a sheep. He said, no, I'm an ugly sheep. I was rejected. I'm weird. I'm deformed. There's something wrong with me. He said, no, Kashi, you're not a sheep. You're a lion. And Kashi couldn't hear. He said, what do you mean I'm a lion? He said, no, look at you. You're not a sheep. You're a lion. And Kashi starts looking at himself and said, I'm a lion? Really? Yeah, look at you. You're the king of the jungle. You're the man. Right? As we say in America, I'm the man. Kashi, you're the man. You're the king of the jungle. So all of a sudden, Kashi realized he was a lion. And everything changed because of how he was seeing things, right? So you react according to how you see things, isn't it? If you see things in a material way, you react in a material way. If you see things in a spiritual way, you react in a spiritual way. For example, let us look at this cup. Here is a nice cup. It says Meyer on it. So look at this cup and think, this is a beautiful cup. Look at it like it's very beautiful, right? It's a Meyer cup. It must be good, right? Now, I want you to look at this cup and think, I want you to think, Meyer cups are the worst cups. They always break. And it's got stains on it. I don't know if you can see it, but you can't get the stains off. It's really a bad cup. And I would never buy a Meyer cup if I were you. It's a terrible cup. And actually, when you drink water, it tastes bad in a Meyer cup. See how bad this cup is. It's horrible. Get rid of it. Get it out of the temple. So you see how when you change the way you look at something, your response changes? So we come to Krishna consciousness, we see the world one way. We read the scripture, we hear from the sadhu, and they change our vision. Or they're supposed to. Our vision is supposed to change. And when the vision changes, what happens? Your response changes. But if the vision doesn't change, the response remains the same. Right? So a couple of weeks ago I was here and I was telling the devotees, when you are raised, when we are all raised, we are all indoctrinated. You know what the word indoctrinated means? It's like, it's kind of like programmed, like where our minds are programmed with certain beliefs. And one of the indoctrinations is how we view other people, right? So you look at somebody and say, what's your name? What do you do? What's your family? Where are you from? And then you categorize them according to how you've been taught to see them, right? And it's different in different countries, right? So some countries, what neighborhood you live in, and what car you drive, and what kind of watch you have, and then, you know, what job you have, and then you're considered high class. In other countries, it might be, no, that's not it. What family you come from, what state in India you come from, what caste you, there's so many, right? And so now, according to how you see, you respond, right? So that's how we were programmed. But that's not the Krishna conscious way to see things, is it? That's the material way. So now, if we learn Krishna consciousness, everyone is spirit, soul, we're not the body, and then we go out in the world and we judge everybody by their body, what happens? We respond according to the body. Right? This is a high class body, a low class body, a middle class body, an American body, an Indian body. A beautiful body, an ugly body, a fat body, a thin body, an old body, a young body. And we respond that way. So that means we have a philosophy, but we don't have a vision of it. And so we can't live it. And so then we come back home, and we say, it was a bad day, I'm in Maya. Maya's too strong. This one devotee wrote me, really good devotee, really excellent devotee. She said, but I have one weakness. She said, I don't know the name of the magazine, some Bollywood magazine. She said, every day, 15 minutes, I read the Bollywood magazine. Otherwise, she's a good devotee, but somehow that's just the habit. You know? I said, so you read the Bollywood magazine? So you're reading about all the Mahajans, right? So we all have something, right? Little or big, that we bring in our tendencies, right? And then we say, oh, it's so hard to be Krishna conscious. A lot of devotees come from America to India, just like our friends have just come. From Gainesville, Hare Krishna, from America, they've come. And so, you come to India, you go to the Dham. So I'm so Krishna conscious in the holy Dham. Right? Because even if you go from Calcutta to the holy Dham, you feel more Krishna conscious. But to speak of from America, it's a big change. But when we come from America, so well, when I was in India, I was very Krishna conscious, and we come back to America, and we get worn out in a few weeks. Have you experienced that? You go and you come back and forth, and go to the Dham, you're very inspired, and you come back to America, and you say, I lost my inspiration. And then we say, well, I can't be that Krishna conscious in this situation. And I say, well, who decided you can't be? Who made that decision? When you say, I can't be Krishna conscious in this situation, who decided that? What verse? Where's the verse? I can't be Krishna conscious at work. Where's the verse? I haven't seen the verse. Can you show me? If you just show me the verse, then I won't try to be Krishna conscious at work either. It'll be a lot easier. Why try? I need the verse. There isn't one. Is there? Is there a verse that says you can't be Krishna conscious in this situation? So when we say I can't, who said I can't? We did. Who decided we can? We did. That was our estimation. Right? But it's not true. It just means we're not trying. Or we don't want to try, or it's too difficult. Does that make sense? Mature understanding is whatever condition I am in this life, it is Krishna's mercy upon me. Let me take advantage the best way possible. In other words, he wanted to leave his family because he thought it was too much maya. He could take sannyas, no worries. Then he could be Krishna conscious. Probably saying, don't think like that. Take it as Krishna's mercy. Then Prabhupada said, if I consider my own personal progress or happiness or any other thing personal, that is material consideration. I'll be happier in this situation. He said, no. You make the best use of every situation. Now, Prabhupada says something really nice. Would you like to hear it? There is one verse from Bhagavad Gita. Yasman novijate loko lokan novijate chaya harsha marsha bayodhegar muktaya sacha me priya. He for whom no one is put into difficulty and who is not disturbed by anxiety, who is steady in happiness and distress, is very dear to me. One mistake of judgment often made by the neophyte devotees is that any time there is some disturbance or some difficulty, they are considering that the conditions or the external circumstances under which the difficulty took place are the cause of the difficulty. Well, Prabhu, the reason I'm not Krishna conscious is because of... And then you fill in the blank with a good excuse. The better the excuse, the better, right? The better the excuse, the better your chances of going back to Godhead, right? Is that how it works? So you're lying on your deathbed in the hospital, and the Yamadutas show up. And you say, oh, you must have made a mistake. I think you want the person in the next room. You must have the... What room number do you have? No, you must make a mistake. I'm a devotee. Look at it. I have neck beads. Kantamala. You must have made a mistake. And they said, no. We were overhearing your conversation throughout your life that I could be Krishna conscious, but... And we have all the excuses written down here that you made. And we're not accepting any of them as valid. So you imagine you're on your deathbed, the Yamadutas come, and they say, well, you're not qualified to go back to Godhead. And you say, well, I could have, but my wife was a little nasty, so I used to get mad at her. Well, I would have been Krishna conscious, but, you know, I'm not that healthy, so I couldn't get up in the morning. I could have been Krishna conscious, but, you know, I'm a little lazy, so, you know, when I chant, I fall asleep. You know, all good excuses, right? So what Prabhupada is saying is that if we think our Krishna consciousness is dependent on situations, we'll always find some situation which is not perfect. And then we'll have an excuse. Why would anybody want an excuse for not being Krishna conscious? Doesn't make sense, does it? It's like, if I promise you to do something, if I promised you that I'll do something, and I don't do it, then I think, oh, I'm going to see him today at the Sunday feast. I better come up with a good excuse. And I think, if I come up with a good excuse, then I'll be okay. Right? But it's not okay, is it? We can't think like that. you know, let's say you see your spiritual master and you haven't chanted your rounds all month. Oh, let me come up with a good excuse. No. You just have to say, it's my fault. Would you like to hear another story? This is an amazing story. One time I read, I can't find it, but I know I read it, that Prabhupada said, if anything is wrong, you should think it's your fault. Isn't that amazing? Could you imagine in this temple, if everybody in the temple thought, what's ever wrong in this temple is my fault, what kind of atmosphere that would create? Wouldn't that be amazing? You see something wrong, and you just fix it. It was my fault, let me fix it. Rather than say, why do they do this? What's wrong here? Why are they allowing this to go on? Why is this not clean? Why is this out of place? No. So Prabhupada once said that. So what a nice way to think, isn't it? It's my fault. So the story goes like this. I don't know if I told the story before, but it's good to tell stories again so we can remember them. So Prabhupada was visiting the Los Angeles Temple, and the Los Angeles Temple was where they had the headquarters for the book publication, and that was in the time when they were doing the paintings. So they had the art department, and many paintings were coming out. And when they were doing the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the whole 17 volumes they did in about 2 months, and all the paintings were done. So, 23rd, there was no room for the paintings. They were just everywhere. So there's one painting on the floor in the Pujari room, in the Didi room. And Prabhupada was taking the tour of the temple, and he walked through the Pujari room, and he saw the painting on the floor. And did I tell this story before? Anyone remember? I did. Some heard it, some didn't. Some forgot that I told it, some didn't. So he was with his servant, and the servant means the person who travels with Prabhupada all around the world. So he turns to the servant and he said, the painting should not be on the floor. And then he said, Prabhupada said, who has done this? Just, no, because Krishna is the same as a painting, it shouldn't go on the floor. And the servant said, I don't know, Srila Prabhupada, it's not my responsibility. I can advise you, don't ever say that to your spiritual master. Unless you want to be right in the fire of a hurricane or cyclone. The Prabhupada said, it is too your responsibility. So it's the same point, right? You don't just look at something that's wrong and say, it's not my responsibility. Well, just blame the president, it's his fault. The Prabhupada said, it is too your responsibility. So I'll read what we read before. Let's read on. No, I forgot to read the translation to that verse I read. I'm sorry. So the translation is, he for whom no one is put into difficulty and who is not disturbed by anxiety with steady and happiness and distress is very dear to me. So in other words, he was putting his wife in anxiety. And Prabhupada's saying, consider this. But, so Prabhupada goes on, one mistake of judgment often made by neophytes is anytime there is some disturbance or some difficulty, they are considering that the conditions or external circumstances under which the difficulty took place are the cause of the difficulty. That is not the fact. In the material world, there is always some difficulty, no matter in this situation or that situation. Do you have the saying in India, the grass is greener on the other side? You have that saying? So I'm in this situation, things are bad. If I just get in that situation, things are better. So I read where someone said, the grass is greener where you water it. That's where it's greener. So you think the grass is greener over there, but just water it where you are, and then it'll be green there. So you can make your grass green, that's the point. Material world, there's always some difficulty. Therefore, simply by changing my status of occupation or status of life, that will not help anything. The real fact is that if there is any difficulty with others, that is my lack of Krishna consciousness, not theirs. So this is how a devotee thinks. Okay, I'm not Krishna conscious in this situation. He doesn't say it's the fault of the situation. He says it's my fault. That's how a devotee thinks. That's what Prabhupada says. Isn't this a nice letter? Did you know this letter existed? This letter, when I was growing up as a devotee, this letter was quite popular and well known. And I came across it in preparation for a class I was giving in Mayapur, and I realized that probably no devotees today have even seen this letter. It's just an amazing letter. The date is... You have the date? What? December 22nd, 1970. Do you have it?
Yes.
Okay, tell us what it is.
4th January 1973, Bombay.
4th January 1973, Bombay. That's where Prabhupada wrote it, yeah. To Madhukar, yeah. Okay. Amazing letter. Because the real fact is that if there is any difficulty with others, that is my lack of Krishna consciousness, not theirs. Is that clear? In other words, he's saying, the problem is my wife. That's why I can't be Krishna conscious. That's the problem. I'm fine. I'm a great devotee. The reason I'm not a pure devotee yet is because of my wife. She's the problem. Or if the wife, he's the problem. Or the work's the problem. Or this is the problem. Or that is the problem. So Prabhupada's making the point, if you think the problem is outside of you, you can't change what's outside of you. You can change what's inside of you. And then all of a sudden you realize it's actually not a problem. The problem was with me, not with what was outside of me. And then the difficult situation is not difficult. Now, not as difficult. Now I have to tell you something about my own life. Give you a little history. I became a devotee when I was going to college, university in America. In my second year of university, I became a devotee and I moved in the temple. So I was 19. And I was involved within the movement from that time and full time as a devotee till the year 2000. So for 30 years, just living as a full time devotee, either in the temple or near the temple. And so at that time, right before that, my wife and I were living in Vrindavan and she wanted to raise a family, so we went back to America and we began to raise a family. So now I had to deal with the outside world, and I never really dealt much with the outside world. We started a business, we bought a home, car, had a child, and so all of a sudden I was surrounded by all these things I had never been surrounded by before, I had never dealt with. So it was a challenge. There was one Buddhist monk, he was giving a lecture, he said, take a sadhu from somewhere in India and bring him to America, give him a wife, two kids, a mortgage payment, two car payments, insurance payments, and a 9-to-5 job, and he's gonna have a hard time. No doubt, right? It's a challenge. We're not saying it's not a challenge. It's a challenge, no doubt. So I was surrounded by this challenge. And sometimes I was thinking, like I'm telling you not how to think. I was thinking, this is too hard. You can't be Krishna conscious in this situation. And in my search for answers, I came to the realization that Prabhupada is explaining here, that I have to change my vision. And what I realized was that actually I became much stronger doing this because the difficulty in being Krishna conscious was greater. It was actually more of a challenge. And because it was more of a challenge, it required more from me. More intelligence, more insight, more self-control, more understanding of how I could be Krishna conscious in that situation. And so when I look back at it, I see actually I became much stronger. That I learned things by going into the fire, so to speak, that I wouldn't have learned otherwise. So actually, when we see a situation and we say, I can't be Krishna conscious in that situation, that should be a sign that here's an opportunity. Because if I can figure out how to be Krishna conscious in a difficult situation, I'm going to have to be much stronger, better, more intelligent, more insightful, more of this, more that. So that's what happened to me. And the reason it happened, there was a turning point in my life. And there was, and the reason it happened was because I realized if I don't do that, I'm going to give in to the situation and I'm just going to say, I can't be Krishna conscious. And then I'll have my excuse. Which again, why would anyone want an excuse why they can't be Krishna conscious? Doesn't make sense, does it? So I realized, either I'm going to be Krishna conscious, or I'm going to have an excuse why I can't, and I don't want the excuse. I want to be Krishna conscious. So that was a turning point. And then Krishna started to show me. Mahatma, you have to think in a different way about the situation. You have to look at it differently. You can be Krishna conscious, but it's going to take something different than being Krishna conscious in the temple. It's going to take a different vision. And so I did gradually develop that vision, that understanding. And I became much stronger. But it was, as I was initially saying, when you think you can't, then what? You're right, you can't, because that's how you think. I can't be Krishna conscious in this situation. You are 100% right, you can't, until you stop thinking that you can't. And as long as you think you can't, 100% correct, you can't. And the moment you think you can, the lights will go off in your head and Krishna will show you how. Really? Because you're thinking differently. You're integrating. All right, I'm learning so many things in Krishna consciousness now. I want to apply them in my life. I don't want to go out in the world and say, no, I can't. Everything I'm learning now, let us apply it. And you'll be surprised at the opportunities Krishna gives you to apply Krishna consciousness, to always be a sadhu, act like a saintly person in every situation. Krishna will send you some very nasty people to deal with, and you'll deal with them very nicely, very kindly, very tolerantly, because he's giving you an opportunity to practice what you learn. And you'll know it when you're in that consciousness and something difficult happens, you will know, ah, Krishna, you sent this. I know you sent this. You want to see what I'm going to do. In America, they say integrity means what you do when nobody's looking. You know, your integrity is, you know, what do you believe? And you do what you believe when nobody knows, when nobody can see it. So whenever we're in a situation, even if we're alone, then we can think, Krishna, I know you're watching. I know you're looking. I know you're seeing what I'm doing. So I have to do the right thing. What's the Krishna conscious thing? So it's actually what we were saying this morning is, the obstacles are good, the difficulties are good, because they make you stronger. And Bhagavatam says, Bhakti Siddhanta says, the obstacles are just a stairway that take you back to Krishna, one by one. And that's how you get back to Godhead. You walk on the stairway of the obstacle. So if you're in a situation and you say, I can't be Krishna conscious, don't say, I can't. You might say, it's going to be a challenge. But then you say, yes, this is good. I need a challenge. Make me stronger, right? Competition, right? It's all about competition. You know, the, there's a nice story. You know about the 4-minute mile? Anybody know the story about the first man who ran the 4-minute mile? Because in the history of human society, at least known recorded history, nobody could run a mile in under 4 minutes, in 4 minutes or less. And the doctor said the reason you can't do it is because it's impossible physically to do it. And some person in 1950 did it. He actually ran a mile in 4 minutes. And after that person, in the recorded history of the world, at least the known history, nobody did it until 1950. And after he did it, that year, I think 35 people did it. And what could never be done. So, you know, challenge. Challenges are good. You know? We can do it. Let's go for it. No one's done it. We'll do it. Somebody did it. Let's do it. So that's how we take it. We don't say, oh, I can't be Krishna conscious. We say, it's a challenge, it's good. How am I going to be Krishna conscious in this situation? So I'm working. It doesn't seem like an ideal environment. Or at home, it may not seem like an ideal environment. Or so many situations may not seem ideal. But within it, there is the seed, the idea, how I can be Krishna conscious, which will pick you up, which will force you to a higher level of bhakti. So now you can all pray to Krishna, oh Krishna, please make it difficult for me. That way I can... No, you won't pray that way. Not yet. Maybe when you're more advanced. So, the Prabhupada said, the real fact is that if there is any difficulty with others, that is my lack of Krishna consciousness, not theirs. So, Mother Teresa, she was good. She was asked, what's the problem with the world? She said, well, the problem with the world is that I am a sinner. That's the problem. Right? So you say, well, what's the problem with ISKCON? Well, the problem with ISKCON is I'm not a pure devotee. That's the problem. So we're looking to ourselves to find out what the problem is and how we can better ourselves. Otherwise, we look to blame somebody for our problems. Why do you want to blame someone for your problems? And you can't do anything about it. If the cause of my problems is Acharyaratna, then I have to change him so I can solve my problem. So what's easier, changing myself or changing him? I may never change him. I'm the only one I can really change. Never underestimate the power you have to change yourself. And never overestimate the power you have to change someone else. Ladies can attest to this. They've been trying to change their husbands since the day they got married and it doesn't work. Right? Any of you ladies successful yet? But you can change yourself, and you can change the way you see it. It's an opportunity. Let's take it. Therefore, married, unmarried, divorced, whatever condition, my preaching mission does not depend on these things. There's whatever, you know, any ashram, any varna, any situation. It's a long letter. Other things are discussed. I want to stay on the point here. Okay, so we have till 2:30, is that correct?
We can take questions.
Yeah, so we'll take questions now. Does anyone have any questions? Does anyone have any arguments? Anyone have any comments? Yes.
My question is on forgiveness.
Okay.
So yesterday you had spoken about two levels, the thinking level and the feeling level. So considering that forgiveness is something very difficult, at least for me. So if I'm thinking that, okay, I need to forgive the person and I wouldn't keep any ill feelings within myself. So I'm doing at the thinking level. So can I expect that at some point of time it will turn into the feeling level? And will it actually have any effect, or will it be stagnant?
So you're beginning by thinking, I should, and now you're questioning whether your heart is going to change. Is that the question? Whether it will? A lot depends on how much we want to really do it. So you weren't here this morning for class? No. So this morning in class, I said, after having taught forgiveness for many years, I realized that there are about four reasons people don't forgive. One of them is, well, maybe five or six reasons actually, but one of them is that we may not actually want to. Because if we do, we think, I'm letting the person off too easy. I need to punish them some more. I need to bash their head a few times before I forgive them. So we're holding them in prison by not forgiving them. And if I forgive them, then they're free. So if we think like that, that means the heart is closed. And will it open? It won't open unless you change the way of thinking. So how do you change the way of thinking? Well, there are many ways you change the way of thinking. And one of the ways is to realize that a devotee's heart is supposed to be soft and kind and compassionate. So if we're a devotee, then it's not what the person did to me. My important thing is how I act, how I respond. That's more important than what happened, is my behavior. So as a devotee, we want to act in a way that Krishna wants us to act. So we think, how does Krishna want me to act in this situation? So one of the things we said is that a devotee thinks, out of his compassion, a devotee thinks, I don't want to cause pain to anyone. And by taking revenge on this person, I'm causing pain to them in some way. I don't want to see them suffer. And the devotee thinks, what right do I have to cause suffering to another person? This is the heart of the devotee. So you have to be open to develop the heart of the devotee, and to be open, you have to be willing to let your prisoner go. Because if you don't let him go, you're keeping the prisoner in your heart. And your heart opens, he goes. And then you lament, I let him go. He hurt me, or she hurt me, or they hurt me. So you have to be willing to be a devotee. Did I tell that story about the devotee who wanted to take over the restaurant? Did I tell that story? It's a nice story. You'll like this. There was a devotee who was running an ISKCON restaurant. And at some point he told the temple, it's now my restaurant, it's not your restaurant. And I guess he had put it in his name somehow or other. So they're having a meeting with Prabhupada. And he said, Prabhupada, you have to talk to him. So they call him in the room, and Prabhupada said, whose disciple are you? The devotee said, I'm your disciple, Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, so? Does everything you have belong to your spiritual master? And he said, yes, Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, and who does a restaurant belong to? And he said, it's mine, Srila Prabhupada. It's a true story. And Prabhupada said, okay, take the restaurant and be happy. Now all the managers of the temple were not happy because they just lost their restaurant. And they said, Prabhupada, we should sue him. And we should get the restaurant, take him to court. And Prabhupada said, but if you do that, you're just acting like an ordinary materialistic person. And said, and that will ruin your spiritual life if you act like that. So that's the consideration of a devotee. I'm acting in a certain way, but am I acting just like an ordinary materialistic person? Is that how I've learned to act after all these years of chanting, after all these classes, after all these instructions? Is that all I've learned? Is to just act like everybody else? That means I'm worse than them. They don't even know. Right? Once you know and you don't act, you're worse. It's a nice story, isn't it? And he said, we'll just become... He said, then Prabhupada said, it'll ruin our spiritual life if we do that, because we're just acting like ordinary people. Did I tell the story about the Prabhupada on the plane and the people smoking? Did I tell that story? Oh, I have to tell this story. This forgiveness workshop is 20 hours, so I can't tell you, 20 hours you can let it go. It's hard. If you can let it go in 5 minutes, you're doing good. But maybe you can open a little hole. You can open a little hole in 5 minutes. Maybe something will drip out. So, Srila Prabhupada was on the airplane going to South Africa, and his servant, I traveled with his servant later after his servant stopped traveling with Prabhupada. So he told me a lot of things about Prabhupada, and he told me that when they were on the plane, in those days they had a section for smoking and a non-smoking section. And so of course Prabhupada was in the non-smoking section, but there was a South African rugby team. You have rugby in India? You do? It's kind of a violent sport. What's rugby like? It's like soccer on steroids. It's really violent. A lot of tackling. It's a more violent sport than soccer. So these rough, tough guys. So one of them started smoking in the non-smoking section near Prabhupada. So the devotee called the flight attendant and said, please ask them to stop smoking. So they stopped smoking. But later on in the flight, they started smoking again. And Prabhupada's servant called the flight attendant, and Prabhupada stopped him. And he said, just tolerate it. He said, if you can't tolerate it, he said, well, what's the difference between you and an ordinary person? So he said, you're just acting like an ordinary person. So that story struck me, that Prabhupada expected us to change and expected us to be different than ordinary people. We're devotees. So after all these years, we're acting like ordinary people. What happened? What happened to all those mantras? Did they do anything? To all the hearing and chanting? In other words, as devotees, we have to be willing to change, because the philosophy, the teachings, the Maha Mantra, it's all meant to change us. Remember, those of you who were here last night, I was saying, we're chanting, but a lot of us don't want to surrender to Krishna. So we can't give ourselves to the holy name, because we're afraid if we give ourselves, Krishna's going to inspire us to surrender. And we're afraid of that. But that's the whole point of coming to Krishna consciousness, is to be changed. So we can stop it. We can, no, Krishna, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to forgive this person. I'm not going to be humble to this devotee. He wasn't humble to me. Why should I be humble to him? That's how materialistic people think. That's not how devotees are supposed to think. So we're supposed to understand how devotees think and act and become that way, even if it's not our nature. That's the process. That's what it's meant for. Then we create a revolution in the world, because we have a society of people who are different. Not a society of people who wear tilak and dhoti kurta and sari and are like everybody else. They just look like they're spiritual when they walk around the temple. Hare Krishna. I look spiritual. But how do I act? I go home and I raise hell, in my life with everybody? No. So I like that story. Don't act like an ordinary person. So, you know, when you're thinking, when you're dealing with some issue, think, am I acting like an ordinary person? And we have to be willing to not be ordinary. Really. And forgiveness is definitely an extraordinary action. What did we read today? We read something Prabhupada said, amazing. Listen to this. The first qualification of those who are advancing in Krishna consciousness is to forgive the offender. Not the 14th qualification, the 64th, the 108th. The first. Did you know that? Forgiveness. No, this is a statement. Prabhupada just said, the first qualification of those who are advancing in God consciousness is to forgive the offender. That's the first qualification. Humility, of course, also is there. So we're, you know, Prabhupada really wants us to change. And Krishna consciousness will change us. We just have to allow it to change us. That's the thing. So that's why I say, your heart won't open unless you want it to. You know, it's okay that you let the person go. Not only is it okay, it's right. It's what you should do. And that will, you'll get an upgrade in your consciousness if you do that. You'll get a free upgrade. You'll go from economy class to business class in your consciousness if you do that. Right? Because that's a huge upgrade. If you can let that person go, that's an upgrade in your consciousness. That's an increase of your compassion towards that person. Because you no longer want to punish them. And then you want, if you want an upgrade, another upgrade, you can pray for them. And if you want another upgrade, you can appreciate them. And if you want the last upgrade, you can serve them. That's what we're supposed to do. Right? Otherwise, what are all those stories in the Bhagavatam for? Are just nice stories to read? These stories of forgiveness, these stories of humility, these stories of surrender, what are they for? Are they supposed to go in one ear and out the other? They're not supposed to touch the heart. And when it touches the heart, what does that mean? I want to be like them. So that's how I feel. I want to be like this. This is my idol. Taka Haidas Ambarish Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj, abused by his father, completely abused. And then he prays to Lord Nrisimhadev, please liberate my father. So that's for us. That's to change our heart. Right? But it's possible that we read these things, but it doesn't change the heart. Because we don't want to change. We want to keep things as they are. So that's something to meditate. If you're willing to change your heart, Krishna can do it very quickly. And you will find, once you forgive fully, that the rest of your life, you'll never have an issue again with resentment. You'll become completely protected. Wouldn't that be nice? To live your life in a way that nobody could really hurt you anymore? You'll have no grudges. Once you forgive fully, that's what'll happen. You'll be good. What a life. Could you imagine that? You have no resentment towards anybody. No hatred. Only you have good feelings, compassion, kindness. How would you feel? Would you be happier than you are now? Of course. You'd be happier than the richest man in the world, whoever that is. Who's the richest man in the world? Some, what? Krishna? Who's the second richest man? Some Arab sheikh somewhere with a million Ferraris in his garage. You'll be happier than him and a million wives and Somaras, who knows what. You'll be happier. Okay, I'll tell you another story. Did I tell you the potato story before? Did I tell that story? 2:28. What time do we have to end? 2:30? After that? Kirtan. Kirtan after. Oh, okay. So, there was a teacher who gave the students an assignment, young students. She said, I would like you to make a list of all the people you hate and write their names on potatoes and bring the potatoes in a bag to school. So they got all excited and they thought of all the people they hated and they wrote their names on the potatoes. And they brought the potatoes, the big bag, to school. And then the teacher said, okay, now here's your assignment. For the next 7 days, you're going to have to carry this bag of potatoes with you wherever you go. To sleep, when you eat, when you take a shower, everywhere. Yeah, 24 hours a day for 7 days. They weren't happy to hear that assignment, especially the kids who had a lot of people they hated because they had a heavy bag. And so now they have to carry the bag, and every day they'd come to school, they'd say, teacher, can we just leave the potatoes here? She said, no, 7 days. And then, you know, maybe after the fifth day, potatoes got wet from showering, and now they're smelling bad. They're sprouting, and they have to sleep with this bad smell, and they have to eat. Trying to eat, but the potatoes smell bad, they have to carry. So they're complaining every day, can't we just leave the potatoes? No, assignment, 7 days, you'll fail if you don't carry. So on the seventh day they come to class, and they're so relieved, they put the bag down, the potatoes. They're so relieved, so happy. What a relief. The teacher says, this is exactly what it's like when you carry hatred for those people in your heart. Wherever you go, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you carry that smelly, weighty, toxic potatoes with you. So if you let your resentment go, what happens to you? You go up. Because now, you get rid of the toxic potatoes. And you take some compassion and kindness. And you get to experience the kindness and compassion rather than the hatred or the resentment or the revenge. What would you rather experience? So this is like Krishna's ultimate karma, right? However you think about someone, you get to experience it. Right? So if we hate people, we get to experience the hatred. If we're kind, we get to experience the kindness. If we're compassionate, we get to experience the compassion. And that's why spreading Krishna consciousness is so blissful, because you're giving compassion, you're feeling compassion. And that's why material life is so miserable, because it's all about me and competing and taking advantage of others. It's a very lower consciousness world. Greed, lust, envy. How can anybody be happy if they carry those things in their heart? Is it possible to be happy? Well, you have a lot of money, but you have a lot of envy and a lot of greed. So, if you're so happy, why are you drinking? Why are you so attached to liquor? Right? All the so-called happy people, they're all drinking. Right? So-called wealthy, successful people, they're drinking. So they're not happy. Because they're living with that consciousness, the toxic effect of that consciousness. Greed is toxic, lust is toxic, anger is toxic. Jealousy is toxic. So when you realize that, then you start to think, okay, maybe I should drop all these things and replace them with something better. Right? Does that make sense? Okay, can I read a few quotes before we end? To forgive is to set a prisoner free and discover the prisoner was you. Here's a good one by Gandhi. If we apply an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, this is in the Bible. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. You react exactly as you have been hurt, so you hurt back. If we apply an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, most of the world will be blind and toothless. because everyone will just be getting back at everyone. This is Suniti told Dhruva, because Dhruva was angry. So she said, "My dear son, don't wish for anything inauspicious for others. Anyone who inflicts pains upon others suffers himself from that pain." So you imagine you have a knife, but on both ends of the knife it's sharp. And you're stabbing somebody, and every time you stab them, you bring the knife back. So you can, but each time you bring it back, you stab yourself. So that's what it's like, stabbing. But you're really stabbing yourself. If you are at war with others, you cannot be at peace with yourself. Do you know that? Maybe this is a Bengali saying. Prabhupada used to say this. If you kill a skunk, you know what a skunk is? You know what a skunk is? A skunk is an animal that sprays an odor. So if there were a skunk in here and sprayed an odor, the whole temple would stink like dirty rags. It'd smell like 1,000 dirty rags hanging around. It'd just smell horrible. That's how a skunk defends themselves. You know, if there's a predator, they'll spray it, and the odor is so bad that just the predators can't take it. It's like a, you know, like garbage piled up to the sky, you know, blocks long of rotting garbage. So there's a saying, if you kill a skunk, your hand will smell. So you understand? You do harm to another, it leaves a stain on your hand. And so you will also be harmed. And here's a nice quote. "I shall not allow any man to belittle my soul by making me hate him. I shall not allow any man to belittle my soul by making me hate him." So if somebody harms you and you hate that person, you're allowing that person to bring you down. Whereas if someone harms you and you serve them, appreciate them, feel compassion for them, you're going up. So I'll never allow another person to bring me down by allowing me to hate them. So I'll never hate anybody. You know, nice, right? And the last one, by this person named Mahatma Das. He's got a quote here also. I have to read what I wrote. "How would you be doing today if you were only forgiven to the degree that you have forgiven others? How would you be doing today if you were forgiven, if you were only forgiven to the degree that you have forgiven others?" It's a nice thought question, right? Isn't it? Okay, so we're going to have kirtan, is that the plan? So kirtan is supposed to change our heart, right? So is everybody's hearts open now? You could just dump all the garbage out and just like let it drip out. We'll create a revolution. So if anyone has any questions more about what we talked about, then where am I going to be after? Where should I be? Well, I'll be here. After kirtan, I'll remain here. So if you have questions, you can ask. And if you want to learn more about these topics, if you go to my website, it's very easy to remember, mahatmadas.com. And there's articles and there's audio about these things. I've written many articles, and there's a lot of recordings, maybe 15 recordings on forgiveness, and several articles, so, and all these topics, how to practice Krishna consciousness. Okay? Is that good? Srila Prabhupada, yes. What? Yeah, add a quote. You have a mic? One more quote. Yes.
Yeah.
coming. Maybe switch it again. You want me to repeat it?
No.
I'll repeat what you said. You say it and I'll repeat it.
I have read this thing, and I think this quotation by his grace, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj
said.
Holding hatred
against anyone.
It's like holding a burning charcoal.
It's like holding a burning charcoal
in the hand. Waiting for that person to
and showing it to the person.
Showing to the person and not realizing that the hand is burning.
Yeah, like it's like holding a burning charcoal in your hand, showing it to the person, I'm gonna get back at you while your hand is burning. Yes. Okay, you inspired me. I'll read another quote. This is from the Bhagavatam. This quote is right in line with everything we've been teaching. There's a couple quotes. This is from the Bhagavatam. The devotee says, these people are not the cause of my happiness and distress. Neither are the demigods, my own body, the planets, my past work, or time. Rather, it is the mind alone that causes happiness and distress and perpetuates the rotation of material life. Failing to conquer the irrepressible enemy, the mind, whose urges are intolerable and who torments the heart, many people are completely bewildered and create useless quarrel with others. Thus they conclude that other people are either their friends, their enemies, or parties indifferent to them. So it's all us. We're the creators of our problems, and we're the creators of our solutions. Correct? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.